Monster Man, Episode 466, Wemmick and Whale. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. But before we do that, it's time to thank some new Patreon backers. But before we do that, it's time to thank a new Patreon backer. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backer, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I take a look at the myths and religions of the world and how to use them in fantasy role-playing games. So thank you very much to new patron, Thea Maria Rieshoved. And if I've mispronounced your name, which, like, 90% chance, I apologize. I should figure out a way to put a pronunciation space on the form. Nonetheless, thank you very much. So, let's start by taking a look at the Wemmick. The Wemmick is one of the creatures created by Dave Sutherland for the 1982 third set of monster cards. And I don't want to generalize about the monster cards creatures, but I will say that the Wemmick, at least, definitely has that sense of being visual first. Being something that was more about how it appeared. And that makes sense. It has a very distinctive appearance. It is a centaur-like creature, but instead of a horse, it has the body of a lion with a human-like upper body, but then a sort of humanoid/leonine face, with, in the case of males, a big mane, and that is what is depicted here. Their society is, quote, a blend of leonine and aboriginal human cultures, close quotes. I don't know about that one, necessarily. However, there is a bunch of great stuff in this entry, like some information on the changing coloration of Wemmick cubs in their first few months of life. Psych, that's not good information. That's useless. It would be okay if that was included as like a minor detail in a discussion that tells us a lot of fun stuff about Wemmicks that could be used in a game. But it isn't. This entry and entries like it remind me a little bit of an essay by a student who has just run out of things to say and resolves to just take more words to say the same amount of nothing. It makes me feel like the writers of this book didn't feel like they were allowed to add anything to whatever they had to begin with. So, like, if they had something where there were a bunch of ecology articles in Dragon or something, then they were good to go. Otherwise, they had to just kind of pad it. And it's a shame because, you know, I said that there was no useful stuff in here, but that's actually not true. There is a little bit. So, for instance, we get the idea of Wemmicks acting as guides in exchange for stuff they can't make themselves. So they have, like, a Stone Age culture day. I mean, that's a weird way to think about it, but never mind. They don't have metal, they don't have like more advanced tools, but they will trade for them with outsiders, and they'll offer their services in exchange, or they'll just let you pass through their territory, because they tend to live in quite remote, sort of savanna-like areas. Think of the kind of places that a lion might live. That all makes sense. I do like the idea that the remote quote-unquote wilderness area that your dungeon or ruined temple or whatever is in, I mean, it's not a wilderness to everybody, it's not remote to everybody, it's not remote to these Wemmicks, they live there. So having to think about how dungeon exploration affects the community that already lives in the area, particularly Wemmicks, like, Wemmicks aren't bad guys, but they aren't necessarily on your side either. They are going to respond to you based on how you behave toward them. So if you were to, say, unleash a horde of skeletons on them, they might not appreciate that very much. I realize the format of this book doesn't really permit it, but I'd love to see D6 Wemmick exploration guides rather than a bunch of stuff about the coloration of Wemmick cubs, or for that matter, what we have at the bottom of this page, i.e. a bunch of white space. You could have fit D6 Wemmick exploration guides in there, and no problem. All this Wemmick gestation simulator stuff, I don't know who that's for. Other than the kind of meta task of creating an air of authority. I'm sure somebody's written a great D6 Guides article, actually. I should just Google for it. But the as much as it evokes certain colonialist stereotypes, you know, I think there's something to be done with that idea of the Wemmick guide as the one who... Is it in Cthulhu Dark that Graham Walmsley... talks about how important that bit in the horror movie where somebody tells you not to do the thing is, that's very characteristic of archaeological horror, that there's someone there going, you know, the guides will go no further today, Effendi. They say this place is cursed. And like, kind of like that being the Wemmick's role, like the Wemmick has a little bit more common sense than everybody else. A stereotype, I grant you, but the European or water deeper or whatever is supposed to be the fool for dismissing the Wemmick's objections as primitive superstition. Not that you would in a D&D game. You'd be like, tell me more about this curse. Anyway, those are Wemmicks. They're fine. There's nothing wrong with them, but they could be better. And if it weren't late, I'd be thinking about how to do some Wemmick guides. Give me your Wemmick guide NPCs, you know, in a couple of sentences in the comments. That'd be fun. Or I guess if you're not on the Patreon, you can tweet at me. At Gonzo History. Or at Gonzo History at dice.camp on Mastodon. I'm trying at Mastodon these days. So if you got a fun Wemmick guide, hit me up on Mastodon. Okay, let's talk about whales. 2 pages, 5 whale types, and a yep, that's a whale all right illustration. This looks like one of those encyclopedia entry monster descriptions, and I was prepared to just gloss over it. But actually, there's some peculiar stuff in the whale section. Whales are described as intelligent, which I think is probably fair enough, and as having a culture, which I think is probably fair enough, but not necessarily what I would have expected from a D&D book. I do think that it's a little weird that one paragraph describes whales as suffering from being overhunted by greedy whalers, and then the next paragraph, literally the next paragraph, tells you how much all the different bits of a whale are worth. There's a kind of mystical approach here, but also, like, I sort of can't decide whether we're taking a naturalistic view of whales, which is especially visible in the orca section, or a more mystical one. So for instance, we're told that the, like, bigger whale, the giant whales, serve as knights and barons protecting the rest of the whales. Now, first, I don't think that's how knights and barons really operate, but secondly, I'm sorry, they do what? And then for the Leviathan, the gigantic whale, we are told that it is, quote, the intermediary between cetaceans and the gods, close quotes. So whales have their own parallel world, basically, their own relationship with the gods, their own social structure, and I'm here for it, because the Leviathan entry then immediately pivots to describing how the Leviathan would attack a fleet of ships. So they hibernate in the ocean depths for long periods of time, and only emerge when they're needed. I love that idea. I love the idea that you might have to, like, get in your bathysphere and go down and conduct whatever rite of ancient whale gods summons the Leviathan from the deep to smash up some invading armada of orc pirates. You better hope those orc pirates are also whalers, which, in fairness, they might be. I am known to not particularly care about underwater adventures, but actually I'm sort of down with this one. I love the idea of having to descend into the creaking depths of whatever. Maybe you would have a magic spell rather than a bathysphere, but like whatever monstrous creatures might be down there that you'd have to battle your way past just to get to this massive ridge that you realize is in fact the slumbering body of the Leviathan. And then you have to probably, you know, get the bard out to sing some whale song that awakens it. Yeah, I could be into that. Especially if the Leviathan is seen in the culture that you come from as like a calamity that happened to civilization in ages past, you know, when the Leviathan awoke and the waters rose to claim the land and the fleet that was headed to the New World were all smashed to kindling and only 7 brave sailors survived to land on the magical island. Yeah, okay. Okay. I mean, it'd be cooler if it was a Godzilla, but it's still pretty cool. And it would allow you to do, like, an evil armada, and you would have to conduct some daring raids, like picking off their smaller ships to figure out where they were going to and when, like, get a copy of the invasion plans. Because a big sea battle, not super interesting, but all the, like, little bits surrounding the sea battle, all the port raids and picking the pockets of orcish captains in waterfront taverns and things like that, something there, something there. The other approach to the Leviathan, of course, is the approach taken by Genial Jack, the pair of 5th edition zines, small books, whatever, in which an entire society lives inside the body of a colossal whale god. I wonder if Genial Jack is specifically meant to be a Leviathan from AD&D 2nd edition. It never occurred to me, but it sounds roughly right. So yeah, I was not expecting very much out of the whale entry, not gonna lie. I thought, you know, there's people that can summon sea life, and they need stats for the sea life, and that's fine. We got the stats for the orcas here. Orcas are pretty cool. It's bread and butter, not birthday cake, but sometimes you need bread and butter. But actually, there's some good stuff in the whale entry. We're close to the end of the book, and every now and again it does still surprise me, which I think is nice. All right, speaking of things I think are nice, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. In the next episode, we're going to be taking a look at some strange and grotesque monsters that have a wonderful appearance but have maybe never quite landed, and we're going to see what we can do to get them over. So I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@Dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.